Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details. Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Cindy changed her name, unlisted her phone number, and moved from Vancouver to Richmond. But no matter what she did, the harassment continued.
This is probably the most baffling case that I've ever come across. One that's kept me awake at nights. I know anybody who's come across this case, the jurors, the coroner's people, police officers who I've talked to, everybody has lain awake at night thinking, can this be? Can somebody have done this to themselves? Can somebody be out there lurking still and have never been caught?
They will be trying to find out if she was murdered or if she committed suicide.
The question is, how do you tie your hands behind your own back and then kill yourself?
And they're willing to keep investigating, but I don't think they're ever going to find a killer. I now believe it's a suicide.
I believe it's a murder, yes.
We did it. We made it. This is the last you'll ever hear me going on about Cindy James. We're going to go through the theories today, and I'm going to give you my theory as well. I started this case thinking one thing. I have come to a completely different conclusion than I thought that I would. You are free to agree or disagree with me on it, but either way, we're going to put this case to bed today. So the first thing I did was go through everyone else's theories and try to poke holes in them, sort of playing devil's advocate on each point, just trying to find a theory that I either couldn't poke any holes into, or let's just say at least the least amount of holes. So we have to choose from murder, suicide, or accident. And if we do land on murder, we're probably not going to come up with the exact person or organization, but we'll at least establish that manner of death here once and for all. So we start with that obvious one, murder, that Cindy had maybe gotten herself involved in something or knew something and someone stalked her for years very sophisticatedly and then finally murdered her. So let's go through a number of different points and happenings, and we'll look at how it points to murder, and then we'll look at the things that point away from murder. And I want to be clear that if there are things that point to Cindy maybe being the one responsible for her own stalking and death, then we're not going to do any victim blaming or shaming or making Cindy out to be a bad person, because clearly if she was doing this to herself, she had some issues. I think she would have been living in her own personal hell. And any coverage that I've listened to or articles I've read, interviews, whatnot, that point to Cindy being the one are all just so scathing of her. And I just don't really think that's fair. I know that when I cover a murder case, I never care about the perpetrator's background and childhood and all that stuff. I just think that the person is a terrible human. But if this points to Cindy, it would more align with like a self-harm situation. And I just have a deep compassion for people that suffer from suicidal ideation and self-harm. I only give my scathing reviews to those that take their issues out on others. But when I look at murder, I'm going to ignore anything that wasn't really witnessed or that could be too easily explained away. So we're going to stick to evidence as much as possible. Oh, and just so you all know, that whole inquest thing that cost us taxpayers the most money in BC history and took 40 days and had 75 witnesses, that whole thing was a bit of a joke. It was not a true coroner's inquest, actually. Like, the jury was made up of ordinary people. And there was only five of them, so they weren't death professionals, and none of the witnesses were ever cross-examined. They just testified about their own feelings and theories. So I think that that explains why they allowed the testimony about the polygraphs, and the whole thing just really pisses me off, and I'm a little bitter about it because I was really hoping for more concrete evidence to go off. But like literally it was like 40 days and then there was only 3 hours of deliberation for them to like basically shrug, which I don't blame them for doing. I mean, they were five ordinary people. They're just going through listening to, you know, 70. Well, I think there was 80 witnesses. So that like 40 that say she was murdered and 40 that say that it was a suicide or an accident. So I don't know. I'm just bitter about the whole thing. So the first thing we have to talk about is the timing. This, I think, leads to or points in the direction of murder because of that recent separation from Roy at the time that everything started, like the phone calls and everything started, all in the sense that maybe Roy wasn't happy, maybe he wanted her back, maybe he was angry, maybe Cindy had actually been involved with another man and then that became an issue. But recent separation and then all of a sudden the calls start is suspicious of another person being involved. Now, the phone calls themselves, these calls were real. Like, maybe the silent ones, maybe we could just put those off as the wrong number or whatever. But the ones where, you know, there was speaking that other people witnessed, those definitely happened. Cindy wouldn't have had the technology to be able to do them like we can today with, like, apps and things like that. So even if we take out all of those calls that weren't heard by another person, there was still at least a half a dozen calls that other people either answered or that was recorded. And then there was that one that was even traceable to Richmond while she was living in Vancouver. Next, we have the witnesses, the downstairs tenants hearing the footsteps when Cindy was not at home, and then the three times that a man was seen by her house at night, and then, of course, there was the guy that ran away when Tom came out to call the fire department during the fire. There were things that happened that Roy, Patrick, Agnes, Tom, her neighbor Tammy, and her mom all witnessed. Like when the doorbell rang that night with her mom being there, there were broken phone lines, windows being broken, alarms going off, and all while Cindy was right there. So she couldn't have been the one doing them herself. There was also her physical state when she was found after each incident. So she was either unconscious a lot of times, she was tied up, one time she was pretty much naked, she had to be hospitalized for hypothermia, she was found wearing boots one time that she didn't own, those nylons were tied really tight enough to leave red marks, and then of course there was the time she was actually stabbed through her hand with that note on it. I do not think that that's an easy thing to do, to, you know, make sure that that note wasn't ripped, there's no hesitation marks in the screaming, like you would think, like, and if you'd have to drug yourself so much to do it that there'd be evidence of drugs in her system if she had, you know, basically sedated or frozen herself enough that she could do that. Now there's Ozzie Caban. Like, she's paying this guy to investigate. So clearly she thinks she's in danger and she wants this to stop. Like, why would you hire and pay somebody good money? Like, she's a nurse. It's not like she's making tons and tons of money. If you were doing it yourself and you just, like, if you just wanted attention, you just to do it yourself, why would you pay somebody to investigate to make it stop? And then the really big one for me is the dead cats and Heidi being abused and then tied up. Cindy, she was an animal lover. She's not going around killing cats just to get attention. The one time she's attacked, well, she's out with Heidi. Like, for her to just leave her dog in the park wandering alone, that's just not something that Cindy would have done. Like, she took very good care of her dog. I don't know how she felt about cats, but animal lovers tend to be animal lovers. They don't go around killing cats and tying things around their neck, strangling them. That is some pretty messed up behavior. And there's no evidence that Cindy was acting all messed up. And then her diaries show that, right? Like, your diaries are your private thoughts. And they weren't actually found until after she was dead. So it's not like she's laying them out there for people to read them. And nowhere do they mention anything about that she's lying. And I do think that that's odd, because she would have to be a pretty amazing liar to not confide in anyone for 7 whole years. Now, Ozzy, her treating psychiatrist, her entire family, and almost all of her close friends who spent time with her completely 100% believed her that she was being stalked, and that Roy, he not only believed her, but that he was also being threatened. I think that he was just pissed off that she was accusing him of doing it, not that he didn't think that it wasn't really happening. She was able to provide enough information to do a sketch and a description of this green van and a bearded man. There were needle marks actually found in her arms, and toxicology reports, they only search for what you ask them to search for. They don't just come up with every single drug known to mankind. So a toxicology report that comes back saying, well, none of the drugs that you asked me to look for were in her system, doesn't mean that she didn't have any drugs in her system. And then, of course, there were alarms going off, rocks through windows, and all while Cindy's right there in the room. And it's the same with the phone lines. And again, we don't have a ton of technology in the late 1980s, early 80s when it started. It was late 90s when it ended. And that time period, there wasn't a ton of tech. We didn't have the internet. So to me, that's very strange. And then she passed at least one of the polygraph tests. And now, even if polygraph tests are not admissible, they're still pretty good at kind of detecting deception. She changed her name, she moved, she repainted her car, and nothing was helping her. And it's expensive to do all of that. So clearly she was afraid and trying to make these incidents stop. And that rope tying expert that testified said it was highly unlikely that she had tied herself up, that it would be too difficult for somebody to do that for them to themselves.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Now, despite them saying that there was really no evidence, there actually was some. I mean, there was the cigarette butt that Ozzy found. Obviously, they couldn't do DNA back then. 2 foreign pubic hairs. Again, there wasn't much that they could do with them. And there was a scent trail that the dogs picked up. And also at her death scene, there was the fact that her feet were clean, but she was found barefoot. And then her hands had been so tightly that one fingernail had cut one of the other fingers down to the bone. And then, of course, there was this phone call to the insurance company after Cindy was dead, inquiring about her insurance policy. And then most importantly, I think, is just as there was, say, no evidence to really point to another specific person being responsible, there was never any conclusive evidence that Cindy was doing it either. And I think that that's a lot of stuff to have happen over a long period of time without ever getting caught doing something to yourself or just doing something like being out on your porch, smashing your lights or whatever it is. She was never caught doing any of that stuff. And then as far as her death, I mean, she was hogtied. There's no disputing that. She had a lethal overdose in her system that would have rendered her incapable of functioning. Remember, it was so large that there was no reliable estimate of how long Cindy could have remained functional. She was also found in a concealed location, no matter what the opinion of others say about that. It was a concealed location. I don't think it's unusual that she wouldn't have been found for 2 weeks, despite obvious so-called evidence that she might have been dumped there. I mean, I think that's a good theory towards murder, but I don't think that actually happened. So if you see this as a murder, there are actually quite a few suspects. Of course, there's Roy, that he had maybe paid someone to do all these things. There's Patrick McBride, that maybe he was obsessed with her before he even met her and planned out their entire relationship. There's the mafia theory that she pissed off maybe someone in a very powerful family. There's the Dr. Ty Hurst and his master-slave relationship thing. And there's also this slew of psychiatric patients and their families that could have been linked to this. And if you do like conspiracy theories, there's the RCMP, that they did it all to make her look crazy. But if you think murder, please don't go with that one. It's not a conspiracy by the police. Just trust me on that one. Now, if you look at it from a suicide perspective, you have to take it as kind of a half-half kind of theory, because there's no evidence that Cindy was suicidal until any of these things started happening to her. So you would have to believe that all of these things were happening, but that somebody else was doing it to her, and that she got tired and distraught, and that she killed herself as both of an escape, but doing it in a way that was kind of like a fuck you, I'm going to show you kind of way. Or you have to believe that she was lying, she was doing it all herself, and then she killed herself as this elaborate plan, and that in fact all of the incidents were suicide attempts. But I'm just going to tell you that I don't really buy that. I don't think it was a suicide. So then we have to look at all the things that point to that she's doing these things herself. She did, when she was quite young, she made up this boyfriend that, remember when her parents were in France, that she said she had this boyfriend that we pretty sure didn't exist. She was kind of cagey. She didn't really tell the truth about Roy and the abuse, like whether he was the one being abusive. She kind of changed her story on that. She actually kind of changed her story a number of times. There was no witnesses to any of the big incidences, particularly the ones where she was injured. There was nothing that happened to her that technically she couldn't have done to herself or paid someone, I guess, to do it. And the threats to her were all kind of weird, like they were kind of like made from TV kind of stuff. And there's no motive for it. Right. There's nothing like she's not being robbed. She's not being continually threatened to not go to the police because like she's going to the police. And it's strange. It's a strange motive. Like they're not, a lot of times stalkers, it's because they're so in love with you and so obsessed with you that they want to be with you. And when they determine that you don't want to be with them, then that's when they get angry. And there's no real feeling like that. Like whoever this person was just outright hated her for whatever reason. And they never really gave a reason for why they wanted her dead. And then of course she always happened to be found. Like she'd be found in the garage, but it was on a night that she had plans. So she knew somebody was going to come and find her. She pretty much, I don't know if you'd say she lied about the sexual assault with the knife. She probably just remembered it wrong, you could say. But either way, that one was kind of weird. Like being sexually assaulted with a knife, that's pretty serious. And that would leave a mark, let's just say. Those nylons and any of the injuries that she had were never really enough to kill her, obviously, until her death, which was an overdose. And then she kept going out and doing things on her own. Like if you were really being stalked, you think you would never want to leave your house, and you'd like, she's going out walking her dog at 3 o'clock in the morning before the fire, and she's, you know, walking by herself. That to me is a little, it's strange that you would act that way when you're definitely being stalked and terrorized. She was under surveillance and nothing happened to her. Like she knew she was under surveillance. Nobody else knew. But as soon as she wasn't under surveillance anymore, then that suddenly things start happening again. Then there, of course, there was the drugs that were found in her apartment. Again, okay, they were prescription drugs. So I don't know that that's necessarily indicative of anything really. But there was the syringe kit, that glass cutter on, I think it was a catheter kit that was found after her death. So the theories on this part of her doing it is that she was an attention seeker. She, you know, maybe a narcissist. She had this multiple personality disorder, maybe borderline personality disorders. Now, I can poke holes through those theories because I think certainly multiple personality disorder and even borderline personality disorder, they're pretty obvious to other people. Like borderline personality disorder. You're not like a raving lunatic or anything. It's nothing like that. But there's things in your personality that make you, it just makes your behavior a little bit odd. And nobody's really saying that about her. She didn't appear to be a big attention seeker. Like, she wasn't loud and dramatic about things normally. It was just this particular event of stalking that was happening to her. So, okay, we have to now get to my theory. Now, like I said, I started this case looking at it from a perspective of someone that I really didn't have a lot of information to go on. I had heard the story just kind of in passing, and I always kind of came to the conclusion that she was murdered, because my belief was there's no way she could have done all these things to herself in the 1980s with the technology that we had then. There's no way. There had to be somebody else involved, and if that was the case, then it's murder. But as I kind of started to analyze a little bit more stuff, I started to lean towards maybe the DID theory, but that didn't totally fit either. There was this one theory that she had maybe been involved in some of this BDSM stuff, like the master-slave thing, and that it had gotten out of hand and that she was silenced because she was taking it too seriously in her life. And I actually didn't mind that theory. It's a little out there, but people keep secrets. They have double lives, so maybe. But the biggest factors that were moving me away from Cindy being responsible for all of this herself was the animals. I could not wrap my brain around the animal abuse and killing cats. And then also that she never got caught, like that she was never seen doing anything strange. But on the other hand, the other little small thing that I couldn't get past pointing it to murder was that catheter. There's no earthly reason that you would have a catheter on you. Like, she didn't have any illness that would have made having a catheter on her anything that she would do. Like, maybe the syringe kit. Like, she could have been a drug user and that nobody knew about it, because, again, people in their secret lives. But a catheter? So I just couldn't land on a theory, because I couldn't poke holes in either of those. Until I came across this criminal profiler, who I don't really want to mention by name because I find her to be very misogynistic, very victim-blaming, but she mentions this word Munchausen, and I'm like, it's not fucking Munchausen, you weirdo. But, you know, I have to do my investigation and I have to poke all my holes in it. And wouldn't you know, I couldn't poke a single freaking hole in it. Factitious disorder on oneself, or Munchausen syndrome. So let me just tell you that before you freak out on me, let me tell you the sort of the definition of this. It's a factitious disorder in which those affected feign or induce disease, illness, injury, abuse, or psychological trauma to draw attention, sympathy, or reassurance to themselves. Munchausen syndrome fits in with the subclass of fictitious disorder with predominantly physical signs and symptoms, but patients also have a history of recurrent hospitalization and dramatic, extremely improbable tales of their past experiences. People with Munchausen syndrome are highly knowledgeable about the practice of medicine, aka nursing, and also in this case, psychiatry, and are able to produce symptoms that result in these lengthy and costly medical analysis, prolonged hospital stays, and unnecessary operation. Now, that's medical. But there are also cases of feigned criminal victimization. And the role of the patient or victim in this case is a familiar and comforting one for them, and it fills this psychological need in people. Fictitious disorder is distinct from malingering, aka faking, in that people with factitious disorder imposed on their self do not fabricate symptoms for material gain, such as financial compensation, absence from work, or access to drugs. The risk factors for developing factitious disorder may include childhood traumas, growing up with parents or caretakers who were emotionally unavailable, either due to illness or emotional problems of their own, maybe they had a serious illness as a child, or they had failed aspirations to work in the medical field. They sometimes often have personality disorders that are comorbid with it, and they suffer from low self-esteem. While there are no reliable statistics regarding the number of people who have this factitious disorder is believed to be the most common in those with a history of working in healthcare. So really, faking your own death to look like a murder. You have this huge long list pointing to murder, and then only these few little points that point to her being involved, and this is what I've come up with. Well, let me tell you, it's actually not that unheard of. Rachel Abrahamson tells a story about her father, who was found murdered, which I put in rabbit quotes, on his way out for coffee. There was a gunshot wound to his head. There was no gun found around him. But according to this 73-page police report that was done, he had spent years researching things on lethal overdoses and antifreeze poisoning before landing on what was his plan, that he had tied his gun to this helium-filled weather balloon. I guess he shot himself in the head, and then, of course, as soon as you do that, you let go, and this balloon took the gun away. And they did a simulator of that that basically showed that that balloon could have sailed more than 95,000 feet into the air and then bursts over the Atlantic Ocean. There was also the case of Lieutenant Charles Joseph Glinowitz in Illinois that faked his murder in 2015. He had been embezzling money from the force, so he made his death look like he was actually being ambushed while in the line of duty in order to get his family the police supports or whatever. But in fact, none of that had actually happened. He just sort of faked the whole thing. So, okay, Kim, so now you're victim blaming. Well, actually, no, because victim blaming implies that I think that she deserved what happened to her. Okay, so then explain why you can't poke any holes into this theory. Well, everything that happened to Cindy was super weird, and it didn't make any sense. And then tying a nylon around your neck, but not to choke them, like, what's the purpose of that? Drugging them, maybe, but why? Like, you tie someone up and then you just drug them and then you just walk away. There was no sexual assault found, even though the time that she was found naked. They never robbed her, and they certainly didn't do anything to silence her. They always seemed to find her, even with unlisted numbers and all that stuff. Like, and who breaks into someone's house without the objective to finish what they came for? You don't want to have to come back and do it again. I mean, that's just too risky. And to never get caught is strange. Now, Cindy was definitely a person that we know she could not stand being alone. And she was always kind of asking people to either stay with her or move in with her. In fact, when she first started phoning the police about the phone calls, her first question to them was, can somebody please stay with me? So I think that there was a bit of a psychological issue there with being alone. And maybe why she wasn't diagnosed when she'd been hospitalized. You have to consider that Munchausen wasn't discovered. Well, it was discovered in 1951, but by 1977, it was really only seen as something that was imposed on another. Like, usually it was a mother with her own child. So, it was getting circulation out there. People knew the term Munchausen, but it wasn't, again, it wasn't something that they looked at. They're like, no, people don't hurt themselves or do things to themselves about it. It was always something that you considered imposing on another person. And we don't actually know about anything that maybe could have triggered each one of the events, because there were some gaps in between the happenings when sort of nothing was going on. And then all of a sudden something would happen, and there had to have been a trigger in there somewhere. And There is sort of a bit of an escalation, right? We start with just the phone calls. Well, the phone calls aren't really doing whatever this need is that she has. It's not filling that. So then we're going to move on to the notes. And then it went on to these physical attacks, which again were strange with no real motive. And like if you're out to kill somebody, you're out to kill them. You're not just tying them up. Well, and then tying them up with a nylon around their neck, but then you kill them in a different way. Like, even when she died, tied up and then she's drugged. So I think that there was actually some event that triggered each one of these incidents that happened, particularly towards the end. And then, you know, if you look at the diary, like, I know that your diaries are supposed to be private and all that stuff, but I think her diary is actually part of the diagnosis here. Like, I think she had plans for that diary that it's going to be found. And she never actually kept it super private. Like, she wasn't secretive about this diary. So I think it was part of her diagnosis. It was part of the Munchausen that she wrote this diary to sort of further the theory and the idea that she was actually being stalked. And then on the day that she's found, she's like 1.5 miles from her car. But there was no evidence of any abduction in that parking lot. Like, her debit card's found, like, it's not just on the ground, but it's like been kicked underneath the car. There's no screams, no witnesses of anything like that. It's a public parking lot. There was no injuries on her, like she'd been grabbed. And that's another thing. They never found any on these physical attacks. They never found any bruising or anything that was indicative of somebody else grabbing her. Like, the calls, I mean, they were definitely recorded. I do not believe that that was her voice. I know there was some theory that she was disguising her own voice and doing it. I don't think that she did that at all. But it's not unlikely that she could have paid someone to make those phone calls. Vancouver has, for many, many years, had a very big homelessness and substance abuse population. Unfortunately, they're just very easily exploited in that way. So it's not... I don't think it's unusual that she could have, you know, paid a person to say, can you call this number and say these things and say it in this way. And they're not worried about getting caught. I mean, it's not, at that time, it's not really illegal to stalk anybody, really, or to make, even obscene phone calls weren't really illegal back then. So why, someone offers you money for food and a place to stay or something, you're just going to be like, okay, I'll, whatever you want. So I think she could have easily done that. Now, that knife in her hand, there's actually nothing that says that it actually went right through. But it doesn't matter, because there are cases of people actually injecting themselves with gasoline with Munchausen. So pain is not a factor in cases like this. It's like there's like a commitment to their illness. With Munchausen, that it's not about, like, pain is just something you can overcome to get to the other side of it or whatever. And I think that that explains all of her injuries, including, like, the lethal overdose. I don't think by that time that her death actually happened, I don't think that she cared really at that point if she lived. I don't even think that she maybe considered that she could have died from it or that it was dangerous. I think she was just very committed to sort of her cause, I guess you could look at it that. And, you know, as far as a past polygraph testing, well, I mean, if you've ever watched Seinfeld, you know that it's not a lie if you believe it. And I just want to play this other little snippet for you. We heard it before on one of the other episodes, but I want to just play the end part of it again. The fact that she says, I don't think I remember anything else, to me is, it's a little bit telling. It's almost like her brain is saying, like, okay, be careful what you say, reveal a little bit. And then it's like, okay, well, I think I've said too much. If I say any more, I'm going to, like, my story's not going to be believable or whatever. So she just ends by saying, I don't think I remember anything else. To me, that's strange. You either don't remember anything or you do remember things. It's a strange statement to say, I don't think I remember anything else. Kind of like, do you want me to remember something else? Should I remember something else? It's a strange statement. I'm just saying that's sort of my interpretation of that, is that it's a little bit telling that perhaps she knew more about the incident than she was letting on, and she was very controlled in the information that she was putting out there, because she knew, like, she's a smart girl, she knows what's going to be believable and what's not, and she knows that you don't want to give contradictory statements, you don't want to reveal, you know, too much information that is false or you don't want to give absolutely nothing. So it's an interesting statement. Let's just sort of take it for what it is.
Well, so how do I explain how high-functioning and well-liked Cindy was? Well, let me tell you a little story. I had this girlfriend. She's unfortunately passed away now. She was the most amazing woman. I loved this woman to death. She was so raw in her honesty. She was so funny. I adored this woman. But she was highly, highly neurotic. And actually, I think the fact that she was neurotic actually was part of her charm, because she was just quirky and funny and that. But she had some issues, let me tell you. But she was still, you just loved her. She was extremely well, high functioning. She was a great mom to her son. She was just amazing in that. She was a good wife. She was high functioning, but she had some issues, but she was still super, super likable. I think people with issues are sometimes even more likable than those that are all well put together. But there are two, kind of going back to the murder theory, two little things that it was really hard to poke the holes into before. And that is the cats and Heidi the dog. And this is a really super, super tough one for me. I mean, we know that Cindy was an animal lover, and accusing her of hurting an animal is definitely victim shaming. I don't think there's just any way around it. But there have been 448 cases that were studied by the National Institutes of Health that reported injuring animals as part of Munchausen. Like, I'm sorry, Cindy, but there is the possibility that she could have used cats that were maybe hit by a car and put a rope around them and made it look like that. I mean, there wasn't a necropsy done on any of the cats, but I think she tied up Heidi, and that was just a really tough one to get over. But unfortunately, I think that it's part of the Munchausen. So how did she not get caught? Well, Cindy was super smart. Like, we knew that. We knew that the psychologist had said she was above average in intelligence. And I think she did a lot of planning, and it didn't take modern day technology like the fake phone apps and delayed text messages we have today. I think she did a lot of research, and I would be super interested in looking at the libraries around the places that she lived and maybe looking into some of the types of material that she maybe checked out, because I think that would be really, really telling. I mean, it's not like the internet. We can't look at Google searches, but we could look at library catalogs. I'm sure they have that back then, and I would be interested in doing that. I mean, I don't think that she was employing others, as in Ozzy and Roy, because I think that they really believed her, because again, she came off so likable. She was so charming. And, you know, it was a time period where it was unfathomable that somebody would do this to themselves, like that they could ever be like, it probably sounded ridiculous to them that the police were like, oh no, she's doing this herself. Like, at that time, you'd be thinking, well, that's insane. Nobody would do that. But nowadays, of course, we've seen, I mean, if you've listened to any of that, something was wrong, or there's been documentary. Well, look at, what's her name? Dee Dee Blanchard. I mean, she was doing it to her child for years, and nobody ever suspected. Everybody thought, oh, poor Dee Dee, like all these things were happening. Nobody ever doubted her. And I think that, of course, there is the distinct possibility that she could have, I hate to use the word exploited, but that's, essentially that's what it is. Like, some of her patients maybe that were kids, they would have been vulnerable. Or, again, exploiting Vancouver's homeless and drug addicted population. I think that that's totally believable. Like, did she know that she was sick? I think that she knew that she was doing things on purpose. I don't think that she understood that it was a problem and that she needed help. Munchausen is actually a behavioral issue. It's not like, say, a personality disorder. Her personality was fine. It was her behavior. And the other strange thing is I couldn't find anywhere where she reacted in, I guess what you'd say, a quote unquote normal way to being accused of lying. Like if you accuse me of, I don't lie about things. Well, I might tell you look good in something when you really don't, but I'm not a liar. But if you ever accused me of lying, I would either be super indignant, like, how dare you accuse me of lying? I'm not a liar, whatever. Even if I guess I was lying, you'd still be indignant about it. Or, I mean, well, in my case, if I was lying, probably my whole face would go red and I'd just be like, it would be shame. But she never really reacted to be like, it was almost like she'd be talking, telling her story. And somebody would say like, well, we think you're lying. And then there would be no reaction to it. She would just be like, oh, and then anyways, this thing happened as well. Like it was almost like she doubled down on it. But not in an indignant way. And to me, that's really telling that she, I guess, in a position where she's committed to her Munchausen. So here's what I think that she did. I think that she did her normal errands, possibly to leave clues that she was doing ordinary things that day. I don't think that she was prepared to die. I think that she was prepared to fake, for lack of a better word, another incident. So she parked her car, pocketed a large number of pills, threw her driver's license under the car, locked it up, and started to walk. Now, possibly she was taking a few pills on the way so that nothing would be found on her. And that would have given her, if she took them orally, that would have given her enough time to get to the house and write the graffiti. Because if you take them orally, it is believed that she probably had about 20 minutes before they really started to take effect. So that would have given her enough time to get to the house and write that graffiti. Now, I don't think that she did any of the graffiti that was inside the house. That could have been there already. I think that she took off her shoes, laid out her coat, wiped her feet with it. I think she was really, really smart about what kinds of things were looked at. Like she's trying to get some pretty good clues on what police look at and what they look into. And then she tied herself up, which would have been difficult. But I think by this time she had some experience doing that. She may or may not have finished actually tying them completely. I think that her finger was cut with her nail while she was doing it. And then she laid down thinking someone's going to come along and find her, or that she had taken enough pills that she would vomit them and then that she wouldn't, nothing terrible was going to happen. I think that she either miscalculated maybe how much she'd actually taken of the drugs, which does seem a little bit odd for a nurse and considering how smart she was about investigations, but she might also have thought that she had maybe built a tolerance, or she realized once she got there, she still had the pills on her and that was going to point to her. So she just like took them all. And again, thinking maybe that she would vomit them up. I honestly think that she thought she was going to be found before anything really bad happened to her. She turned out to be wrong and she died from an overdose accidentally. I mean, if other people with medical Munchausen are drinking gasoline, I don't think your well-being is necessarily at the forefront of your mind when you're doing that kind of thing. I think that she had the catheter on her, or like at least she carried it with her sometimes, because I think she used that to take her own blood and then use it at scenes kind of, or well, she used the syringe to take some of her own blood because she was drawing blood, not necessarily injecting anything, and then would sort of use this catheter thing to spread blood around at scenes kind of like this. Not, she didn't use blood on this scene, but some of the other ones she did. And then of course the glass cutter, I think, was kind of obvious why she had that. I think that a lot of the things that she did herself, like the notes and some of the alarms, the fires. But then I think she did use another person or persons to do the other things like the calls and setting off some of the alarms when she was, you know, when she had guests over and she could have someone set off the alarm, say when, so they would say, oh, she was in the room with us, so it couldn't have been her. I mean, listen, if Dee Dee Blanchard can hide what she was doing for like 20 years, I think Cindy could have done it as well. I think she was very smart. She was a very smart woman with a very serious behavioral issue. I'm still super sad about the cats and Heidi, But I think that Cindy wasn't really thinking about that. I think that in her mind, she's thinking everything's fine. She's fine. The dogs are fine. It's all fine. I just need to do this one thing and I have to make it look believable. I think there's a really strong commitment once you start these things. It's weird because I don't actually dislike Cindy. I think she had some pretty serious issues, but I think other than this, well, let's just say other than the Munchausen thing, she's a lovely person. And I think that's why her family and friends and Roy feel the way they do, that she was very charming. She was believable. And she might have actually fed their fears, making them, you know, maybe think that they saw and heard things to align with what she was saying was happening to her. I don't blame any of them. I think that they were, like, I don't think they were delusional at all in believing everything that she said. I think that they were friends and they were family. It's the same way us women, when one of our girlfriends breaks up with her boyfriend, we say things like, oh, you were just too amazing for him. He just wasn't man enough to handle all your amazingness. Even though sometimes in reality, I mean, your girlfriend's probably a nightmare. I'm just saying we support our friends. So I think in the end, she was failed by absolutely everybody. I think the psychiatrists, tons of psychiatrists, Roy, Patrick, Ozzy, I think even the police, by the fact that they didn't believe her, but rather than trying to get her any kind of help, they just kind of, they shamed her out of telling the truth. So I think that the fact that they didn't believe her and were telling her that they didn't believe her actually kind of amped this up for her, that she had to get a little bit more dramatic each time. And I think that that led to her death. I don't think her death in any way was a suicide. I think it was an accident. I think that she had gone so far by that point. I don't think she even really considered how dangerous her behavior was to herself. Okay, so after all that, I'm sure that half of you now hate me. And the other half are like, just thank God this case is over and we can all move on. But listen, we aren't going to do this again. This was one case. Everything's going back to normal next week. Just settle down. And if you did like this analysis, well, that's unfortunate because I can't see myself doing it again. However, if you do like it, you do like this kind of deep dive then of kind of going through the theories for the truth, then I think you should listen to the Prosecutors podcast because they do these kind of things all the time. But this one is Canadian, so they haven't done it. They probably aren't going to do it. I just got tired of them waiting for them to do it, so I just did it myself. But we are all moving on now. I'm going to be back next week with a regular and normal episode and succinct like you guys like best. In the meantime, do your rate review thing, but only the good stuff. Don't say anything bad. And I'm going to be back again next week with another case. Thank you so, so much for listening.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details. Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.